We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Talking Buffalo, featuring conversations with guests from around the world of sports, media, pop culture, and all things Buffalo, with your host, Patrick Moran.
All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Talking Buffalo, your weekday daily driver for Buffalo Sports Talk and more. My name is Patrick Moran. Thank you, as always, for checking us out, whether you're watching us on the video side on YouTube or whether you're listening audio podcast form, wherever you get your podcast from. Appreciate you very much. I'm going to bring on Anthony Marino here in just a quick second. Real quick, though, right away off the top, before I forget, I want to shout out the Buffalo Bandits. Taped late last Sunday night. The game still wasn't over, though. But the Buffalo Bandits came back at home on Sunday night from a deficit against Toronto and are going to yet another NNL championship. So, I mean, here in a city that kind of lacks champions, this team perennially gets to the championship round all the time. So that's just great to see. So I want to make sure that I give some love out here right at the top to the Buffalo Bandits. And on that note, I am joined, as always, around this time this week, my buddy Anthony Marino. Man, what is what's going on, man? How you doing?
It's good to be back, man. You know, it's that time of the season where it's like, all right, things quiet down a little bit, you're waiting for the schedule to come out, but it's just really the countdown to training camp. So this kind of helps scratch the itch of, you know, getting closer to that.
Plenty of scratches left before camp gets here. Yeah, it is that time of year. You know, you go through, so you got the season, and then the season winds down, and then you start to focus on what players on the team internally are coming and going, you know, who's going to stay, who's going to move on, and then you get to free agency, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about leading into that. Then after a while with free agency, you get to, becomes draft season, mock draft season. I love it. One of my favorite times of the year. Then the draft comes, and it goes, and you know, you get a couple signings, one of which we're going to talk about. And a spoiler alert, you already know I'm not happy about it. We'll be talking about that. But yeah, it's not really a lot going on right now this time of year. So we're going to have to get a little bit creative and kind of come up with more specific topics. I kind of want to focus today, and I want to be careful. We talked real briefly before we started rolling the camera here. I don't want this to come off as it being a negative type episode or me specifically being negative towards the Bills offense, so to speak, because it's kind of like, I feel like the Bills have like an offensive, I don't know if I want to call it identity crisis, but this certainly seems to be an offense that is changing from what we saw maybe a couple of years ago when Stephon Diggs got here and you had Cole Beasley and John Brown just chucking it all over the field. Just seems to be a different type of offense. I want to let people know, too, by the way, at the end of this episode, we're going to do our Finish the Sentence segment. We don't do that as often as I like it. That's always been one of my favorite things, giving fans a chance to know a little bit more about Anthony and myself beyond just, you know, the sports talk that we have on here each week. I don't know, man. Where do you want to kind of dive in? Let me start here. Pre-draft, Anthony, all the talk seem to be about Josh Allen having like his most success with guys that are smaller or that separate quickly. You know, they get open fast. Guys, like I said, Diggs and Beasley and Brown. And we kind of pointed out that, you know, the offense struggled a little bit when, you know, Josh Allen would even throw the ball to Gabe Davis, not counting the Chiefs game or, you know, early in his career, Kelvin Benjamin, just some of the bigger, slower guys that don't separate as well. I remember Red and Bean even talked about this going into the draft, but kind of what we're seeing lately is dictating otherwise, like personnel. I guess let's start here. Let's kind of just talk about how you feel this offseason has went between free agency and the draft, everything in terms of the offense. Not better, not worse. I'm not saying that, but it certainly looks different, right?
Oh, yeah. It looks different. It feels different. I mean, listen, Stephon Diggs, you know, aside from Josh Allen, has been the focal point of the offense for the last four seasons. And for the most part, that has been great. And I say for the most part, really up until that, the final stretch of the 2023 season, where, you know, before he was even traded and during the season, like something seemed off, whatever it was. And that's no speculation. I don't know anything, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it's a bit different. But when it's also a bit different, it's like, you know, I think we talk about guys that can separate. Like Curtis Samuel is, statistically speaking, right, and all the advanced metrics and things that I'm not smart enough to understand, but people that are smart enough to understand talk about, he is one of the best in football at getting that separation, right? Yeah. So I don't want to say just one guy checks that box, but it's also a piece like, you know, free agency felt like it was so long ago, and everything that has taken place since the start of free agency, which wasn't even 2 months ago, that, yeah, it feels different. It's an offense that, at least when it comes to receivers, is adding more size as opposed to, you know, I mean, remember before they used to call their receiving core the Smurfs and what that would be and what that would look like. But that hasn't been the case right now. But, you know, with that too, and I think as we go back and forth, I'm not looking at a signing of what is it, Quintez Cephas or Chase Claypool, yeah, or pieces where it's just like, oh, these are guys that are meant to, you know, be focal parts of this offense. So, you know, you still have guys on the opposite side of that spectrum that I would say, like a KJ Hamler and Andy Isabella. And before you start like yelling at your screen or your podcast or whatever, I'm not saying that those guys are going to be the difference maker either, but you have a balance on this roster of the shifty, small, fast guys and some of the bigger targets that maybe the Bills haven't had in the past. I mean, training camp will be interesting from that standpoint, but it is a balance now when you look at that group as a whole.
I gotta, before we talk about the offense as a whole, and I'm going to admit that there is a good chance that I start talking about Chase Claypool right now and maybe 2 weeks into camp, he's not even a Buffalo Bill anymore. I get that. I know that they're not signing him with Brandon Bean counting on him to be an integral part of the offense. I get that. So I want to make that real clear when I say that. But I'm not going to lie to you, man. I absolutely hated and still do hate the signing of Chase Claypool. First and foremost, above all else, and maybe I'm wrong, and you tell me, which, by the way, I got to say this. So Friday, last Friday this happened, Chase Claypool signs with the Buffalo Bills. Immediately, I kind of lose my shit on Twitter because, first of all, man, I'm spending so much time studying these receivers for the draft, right? And then it goes nothing like we expected. Like the type of receiver we thought the Bills would target, they didn't. Then I'm going through a list. All right, well, June 1st, you know, the Bills, who might they sign? I think we might have even talked about this last week on the show. Types of receivers. And I probably went through at least 8 to 10 guys. I'm like, well, this guy can do it, this, this, and that. Chase Claypool was not on that list. So anyway, long story short, I was pissed off. It ruined my Friday. I want to pull up a tweet because I knew that you were going to chime in. So last Friday, I put this up on the video side. I tweeted this out. It was kind of like in the late morning. I said, Miami signs Odell Beckham Jr. and the Bills sign Chase Claypool. this Friday sucks. When does happy hour start? And then Anthony gets on Twitter and says, I just logged on to make sure you weren't overreacting. Glad to see you're taking things in stride. No, Anthony, I'm not taking things in stride when it comes to Chase Claypool. I'll let you know that right now. I will talk about him as a player if you want, or his character in a second. But this is what I hate most about these type of signings. I hate the term, and maybe I'm wrong for this. You tell me if I am. Taking a flyer on somebody, or, you know, no risk. I don't buy that, because to me, when you bring a guy like Chase Claypool in the camp, every single rep that this guy gets, 11 on 11, 7 on 7, whatever it may be, every rep for a receiver that I know who he is taking away a rep from somebody like, say, Justin Shorter or KJ Hamler. You mentioned him earlier. I don't really want to say Annie Isabella as much, but there's guys on this team that I want to see more of. And every time Chase Claypool's out there taking a rep, that's a rep that someone else is not getting. So I've always had an issue with, you know, the no risk or just taking a flyer on somebody. Where's the harm? The harm is that someone else who I think is more deserving or might have more potential, more upside, is not getting that look. Let's start there, because we haven't talked about it on the show anyway. What was your thoughts on Friday with the receivers that were left and that the Bills signed Chase Claypool?
Yeah, it was a nothing burger to me. And I am the person that sent out a tweet. I'm surprised you didn't pull this one up, where I was like, I don't have any issues with the Chase Claypool signing. I don't see it. I see it as low risk, and why not just take a flyer on it? So I'm surprised that one didn't pop up on the screen too. But you know, you talk about it, and I get everything that you're saying. I really do. But the thing that is different with this one, and you're a Notre Dame fan, you would have followed him closely. No one is out and saying anything glowingly about him right now, and that part is fine. What I talk about it, though, in the risk and being worth a flyer, I mean, it was those first two seasons in Pittsburgh that Bills fans would have been like, God, I wish I had this guy on our team, right? Like, over 900 yards as a rookie, over 800 yards his sophomore season, you know, not playing with peak Ben Roethlisberger. So you can look at it and just say, for what he was during those first 2 years, not the next 2 years, those first 2 years of just like, okay, there's certainly a level of talent there. Now, the talent has to match up with the mindset, the work ethic, all of those things. But it's, you know, when I say you're taking a flyer on someone, it's not a 36-year-old T.Y. Hilton and hoping that he still has something left in the tank. It's not saying like, hey, I'm going to add who is the wide receiver? I don't know. He's from like the, you know, or Devontae Freeman, and putting him on our practice squad at, you know, on the wrong side of 30. The guy's 24 years old. So to that extent, it's just like, okay, I know how I was at 24 years old. Maybe you remember how you were. Like, I didn't have everything figured out. I made some mistakes. Like, is it a second chance or a third chance or whatever it is? Like, and trust me, there's nothing I read about him to say like, oh, hey, I think this guy's a cultural fit or any of that. I'm not defending him, but it's just like, you know, when they traded for Corey Coleman a few years ago, like, all right, you bring the guy in. If it doesn't work, you cut him. I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, hearing how he looks with, you know, Mitch Trubisky throwing in passes with the third team offense and training camp. And then all of a sudden he's going to be cut and you're not going to think twice about it. So that's my take on it again. And then if it works and he shows some semblance of what he used to be and, you know, gets things right, knowing that this is probably his last chance, yeah, that's when I say it's worth a flyer.
You know, and I'm going to preface this too. Maybe I'm a year older, Anthony, now, and I'm just...
It is your birthday today. I thought you'd be in a better mood about Chase Claypool than you are. So happy birthday to you, and I'm sorry that Chase Claypool is ruining things for you.
I appreciate the sentiments. Yeah, maybe I'm just getting another year older and a little more crankier. I also look at it this way. And look, you are right. I am a big... I don't want to regurgitate everything I pretty much said on the show with Joe from Queens yesterday, but some things I need to. I am a big, big Notre Dame fan, and I did follow Chase Claypool at Notre Dame very closely, and I subscribe to a lot of like Notre Dame football newsletters, and now even so more than ever. But I remember even when he was at school, he was a great player in Notre Dame. I mean, a great player. Kind of a dick, though, man. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories about him, even going back to college. He comes into the NFL, second-round pick, has a really good rookie year, pretty good second year, and then he gets traded for lots of reasons. Again, cultural stuff, didn't work out in the locker room. I've been hearing, again, ever since Notre Dame, the guy is a lazy route runner. He does not pay attention to the little details. Could be all wide receivers, I think, to some extent, are selfish. So that's not anything unique, you know, about him, but just a lot of stuff. And then he gets traded to Chicago, and Chicago gives up a second round pick to get him, and they couldn't get rid of him fast enough. He pretty much did nothing in Chicago. And I know a lot of people are going to point to the fact that that offense sucked and he didn't have anyone really throwing him the football. There's some fairness to that. Then he gets picked up by Miami, and Tyreek Hill's leg is going to fall off last year, and Jaylen Waddle literally didn't even play, and the guy still didn't step up and do anything. And I know some people will talk about, well, he went to Miami midseason, you know, McDaniel, complicated offense, yada, yada, yada. Well, they could have brought him back cheap, and they didn't. So he's yet on another football team. And the other thing that bothers me, you know, I said take a flyer. I have a problem with that. I have a bigger problem with the fact that I looked at that list. Who's out there? I did want Odell Beckham Jr. I thought, even if he's not the same player he once was, but there people will respect him. He will, just like with Stephon Diggs, even if Stephon wasn't putting up great numbers, you got to respect, you got to count for him out there. I think he opened stuff up for other people. I thought MVS would have been a better fit. Hell, I would have thought anyone would have been a better fit. Mecole Hardman, there's a lot of guys out there. So I think maybe my reaction in real time, especially, maybe a little bit now, but more in real time, my reaction was just disappointment that the Bills didn't sign someone else, because now you sign Chase Claypool, you're probably not going to go sign an MVS, which maybe you would have before. And it kind of brings me back to the Stephon Diggs thing. It's like they trade him, and then just really I expected more. And if the more is drafting a rookie, which we all knew was coming, and signing Chase Claypool from the wide receiver room, I kind of feel like, what are we doing here? I can't
help it. Bruce Nolan has a great statement that he uses often, and he says, expectations minus reality equals disappointment. True. And to this point, I think it just comes to, and not just for you, like what the expectations were for a lot of fans of what the Bills were going to do at wide receiver, and all the talk of trading up in the draft or different, you know, options that they would do. And listen, I bought into a lot of it. I mean, we talked about it on this show. I guess the thing is for me, it's just like, hey, it didn't happen, but you got Keon Coleman. I like this guy. If you trot out, you know, your three wide receivers is Coleman, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say they're the greatest show on turf, but I'm also not going to sit here and be like the season is over and, right, oh my gosh, Odell Beckham Jr. would have made all the difference. I mean, I said it with you last week. Like, I felt like the difference for Bills fans of being happy or not would have been like if they took a wide receiver in the fourth or fifth round. You know, just like, oh, they got whoever, you know, and it's like, that's fine. Like, yeah, I was tweeting like, hey, go get Troy Franklin, like trade up and go get him, you know, do these types of things. But again, if my expectations for the team hinges on a fourth or fifth round pick or Chase Claypool signing on a 1 year vet minimum contract after May 1st, like maybe my expectations just, I gotta bring them back to, I don't want to say to reality, but just like there's not something else big coming there. And if it does, it will be a huge surprise, but it's not coming as a free agent.
Yeah. I know, maybe it's my expectations. And again, I think I'm in a pretty shitty mood. Maybe that's all when it comes to this football team right now. But we kept talking about June 1st because the Bills get money on June 1st. And we know they got to sign their rookie class. But we were assuming that if they're going to take a moderate swing, like say a Leonard Floyd type swing, we're like, well, that's coming June 1st. But now they signed Chase Claypool. They got a billion receivers. I mean, they got a lot of quantity. We'll see how much quality they have. And then they also signed, by the way, where I know we're talking about offense today primarily, but Dwayne Smoot. And I don't have a problem with that, by the way. I mean, he's a pretty good player. He feels like if he could get 100% healthy, because he had the injury, I think the Achilles or whatever. he's a Shaq Lawson type, maybe even upgrade over what Shaq Lawson was. So I got no issue with that. But like, what are they doing with that money now on June 1st? They're going to sign their rookies and roll it over to next year, even more money and more cap stuff for next year. It just kind of goes to what my issue has been with this team this whole offseason to an extent is you got a quarterback going in his seventh year. He's in his prime, and he might be in his prime for quite a while, but I'm just not down with not being fully committed to trying to win a championship in any year when you got a quarterback as good as Josh Allen. And I'm not saying the Bills are not trying to win right now, but you know, you trade Diggs for an asset next year, you trade during his draft for an asset next year, you're signing low guys like, you know, Chase Claypool would pretty much, to me anyway, no real upside as far as I'm concerned. And there's guys out there, I just feel like, you know, they're not making a trade or not, just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being whiny today. I don't know what it is.
Who are you expecting them to trade for that's like been moved that would have been like, what, when you say they're like, they're not all in, like, what are they not doing that someone else
is trying? I don't think they're good enough at wide receiver. I just flat out do not think they're good enough at wide receiver. I know that's an unpopular opinion. People don't want to hear that in May. What are we in? Are we in May? We're in May. People don't want to hear that. I don't think the Bills wide receiver room is really good. You know, I did an exercise on yesterday's show with Joe, and I spent a lot of time last week going through, because a lot of times we complain about stuff. You like the Bills offense isn't good. Well, the metrics say they're good compared to the rest of the league. Last year, I'm talking about when we used to say that for a while, there was a stretch where the Bills offense looked like shitty, you know, but when you look at the metrics and the numbers, you're like, actually, the Bills offense has been pretty damn good all season compared to its peers. So I went around the league and I took wide receivers 1 through 4 for every single team in the league and kind of made my own chart and kind of slotted in where the Bills were. And I don't want to go through the chart again, but what I will tell you is I had the Bills like with the 25th best receiver room in the league right now, and I tiered them in the 6 different groups, and I got them in that 5th tier. I just don't think this room is really good. I think Curtis Samuel's decent. I mean, he's not a bad receiver. Khalil Shakir is definitely emerging. I don't know if he's a future star, though, but I could be wrong because I do like him. Keon Coleman's going to take some time. He's a rookie. And I'm going to be honest with you, though, with Keon Coleman. I know, again, I'm being cranky today, I guess, but I'm going to kind of stick with my guns. You know, before the draft, I didn't think much of Keon Coleman, and neither did 99% of people who create any content for the Bills. I would have rather than taken Brian Thomas Jr. moved up or even Leggett. I don't know. I just don't think this wide receiver room is really good. And it kind of annoys me now that they traded Stephon Diggs, which is a complete 180 of how I felt when they traded him at the time.
All right. Couple thoughts related to that.
You're like one, my therapist today.
The team, there's more than wide receivers that play the game of football.
True.
So if wide receivers was all that mattered, and I realize the narrative this offseason for all of us has been so focused on the wide receivers, then I would get that. But there's more to this offense than that. There's much more to this offense than that.
Sure.
And I get it. Like, people don't want to hear this part either, but it's just like, hey, even last year's draft, when you're talking about wide receivers, and then they're disappointed that you bring in Dalton Kincaid, like, oh, don't, you know, offensive weapon or, you know, pass catcher, whatever. Well, it is what it is. Like, if this guy's going to catch 100 balls this year, like, great, fantastic. Like, that's,
I get it.
That's okay. Like, that's something that can happen. So I think there's that piece of it. And listen, I can be the optimist. You can look at other teams and just say, you know, that list you had, I couldn't, you know, see all the fine print as quickly enough. Like, but yeah, some of these teams for what they have today. And again, the season doesn't start tomorrow. So I think with some of this reference, I talk about what they had last season, you know, but you look at what the Chiefs had last season and it's like, okay, that's a team that won a Super Bowl with no, you know, bona fide wide receiver one that anyone's going to say like, oh my gosh, this guy is fantastic. You can look at the Baltimore Ravens and look at their team and just say, okay, yeah, they drafted Zay Flowers. He shows some upside, but no one was this target monster for them. You can look at what the Green Bay Packers were last season and the success that they had. So, you know, there's a lot of things and people be like, oh, well, you know, but Detroit, well, yeah, Detroit also had 2,000 yard rushers. So like, I don't know, is anyone in Detroit screaming about them being a, you know, a run heavy team and negating the pass and this and that? So I, you know, I get where you're coming from. I do. And if it was like somebody traded, you know, got Brandon Ayuk for a fourth round draft pick, like, yeah, then I will flip out with you and be like, what the heck is happening? But until any of those guys are moving, until somebody is making a move that it's just like, gosh, the Bills should have done that, I'm not going to think that they're not, you know, that they're not committed, that they're not all in. It might not be as flashy as we want it to, but I can look at this and I can see a path to just like, yeah, it might be a little bit more balanced than some people might want to say. That part I get too. And nothing would make me happier than, you know, Khalil Shakir establishing himself as a 100 reception guy, or Dalton Kincaid or Keon Coleman, and someone becoming a superstar that's going to demand double coverage and 10 targets a game. But if it doesn't happen, there's enough examples that you can see where, hey, you could have four guys getting 100 targets this year and having some pretty insane balance, and you can still be pretty successful. So I'm going to hang in there with me, man. Hang in there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So kind of at the beginning of the show, I said I'm going to try to make this sound like I'm not being too negative. And pretty much that's all I've done when it comes to this Bills offense is be negative. And I do know that they are still going to be a good, potentially still great offense at the end of the day because of the balance and all that other stuff. But that said, I still got two things that I am going to still be negative about. I'm going to warn you ahead of time. One of them is this, and I feel like such a damn hypocrite. But I think my biggest problem right now, when I keep complaining about the wide receiver room specifically instead of the offense as a whole, is I feel, and I think I'm going to use this term maybe last week even, but I feel a little bit duped about the Stephon Diggs trade. I keep going back to that. Because again, without having knowledge of, you know, we're not inside those four walls at One Bills Drive. But man, I go back to April 3rd and Stephon Diggs gets traded. Should have been a telltale sign right away when the asset was for next year and not this year. And I think in my mind right now, okay, they still, even if they didn't trade or if they kept Stephon Diggs, they still probably draft Keon Coleman. I mean, they were going to take a receiver no matter what. And I don't know. I look at that wide receiver room and I can't stop thinking about this. Even if I should, you have Stephon Diggs, Samuel, Shakir, and Keon Coleman. And to me, that just sounds a lot more appealing. I think trading Stephon Diggs is going to put a lot more pressure on Keon Coleman early on to be more productive as a rookie. And I know I'm crying over spilled milk. Trust me, I get it. I'm usually the guy who criticizes and bashes somebody when they talk about and complain about what I'm complaining about right now. It's just like, man, I really wish the Bills could have found a way to work with Stefon for one more year and said, listen, man, get through this year. Let's figure this out. Let's try to win a Super Bowl. And then we'll get rid of you after the season. I can't keep going back to that. And I supported the trade because I genuinely thought when they traded Stephon Diggs, one or two things are happening. Either A, Brandon Bean's got a bigger plan. Like he's going to make a trade. Maybe Brandon Ayuk. I wasn't really much on Deebo Samuel, but I don't know. A couple guys out there. Maybe somebody that we're not even thinking about. But I thought some sort of trade was coming because they don't have the cap room to go inside a big money receiver. Or I'm like, they're really all in to go try to get Roma Dunze, or maybe even trade up for Brian Thomas Jr. Or at the very least, they're going to get receivers with two of their first three picks. And none of that happened. He traded out twice and got Keon Coleman, who obviously they like, and I'm going to give him every opportunity. I don't know. I keep going back to Stephon Anthony. It just, we'll find a way to get, he's too good of a player just to get nothing for this year. They didn't get anything for him this year. It's all about next year. And that's, I think, what's got me bothered the most.
Well, I mean, listen, you've got to build for the future as well. And I know that doesn't sit well with you right now when you're just talking about this season, but we've said before, like, this year might be a bit of a step back. I mean, and that could be a wild card year. Like, it can happen. It doesn't mean that everything has to be exactly right. What you want it to be when you talk about the long term. I mean, this isn't Josh Allen's last stand. And we've seen teams do this before. I mean, we've seen the Green Bay Packers trade Davante Adams. We've seen Tyreek Hill get traded. We've seen Stephon Diggs now get traded multiple times. Odell Beckham Jr. in his prime moving to the Browns. I mean, these things, it happens. And I'm gonna say this, and I believe this is what was said, but Jay Skursky, who you're close with, was on with Tyler Dunn like last week talking about some stuff post-draft. And, you know, they were talking about Diggs and the Diggs trade and just kind of one of those things. And, you know, I believe it was in the background and not in the background, but like Jay had said, he's just like, he's a cancer. And like, you know, and the conversation just kept going. There is a certain point with a team where, and again, for on paper and expectations and all of those things, we can look at it and say, God, I wish they still had Stephon Diggs, the receiver, on this roster.
Sure.
I certainly do, right? Like, there's no question with that. I'm not in that locker room. I don't know what's happening. I don't think Brandon Bean would have traded him away just to be like, hey, I'm punting on this year. You know, when they say that this is what's best for the team, I'm not going to use the term addition by subtraction. Like that's not it. But sometimes like it's just going to get old. It's going to wear thin. And often you see it with a lot of marquee wide receivers that sometimes this stuff, it just happens. Like you have your four years, it's good. It's run its course, move on to the next one. So it's, you know, again, Jay would probably have some better perspective than anyone when you kind of think about that, and there's probably some more out there that you just don't know. Right now, I look at it, that's probably a top 50 pick next year, and I'm really happy that the Bills have it right now.
Look, I want to be clear, too. I'm upset about them trading Diggs and not getting more after trading him. But I will say this. I can't criticize the trade because it got to a point where it was going to become an issue if he stayed in Buffalo. And I'm really confident in saying that. So I get that. I'm just saying, I just wish there was a way that they could have came to a better understanding and worked together for another year. That's all I'm saying, because him on the football field, even in his decline, and assuming that that's coming, the offense is just a lot different. And this is my last kind of complaint. I think maybe it's because of the quarterback that the Bills have. You got Josh Allen, man. You know, one of the ultimate gunslingers, not just today, but of all time. I mean, this is the kind of guy who should be flirting with 5,000 yards every single year just because he's that great at chucking the football around. And it just feels like the head coach that they got, You know what he wants to be. You know what he wants. He wants to run the football. He wants to win time of possession every Sunday. He wants to keep his defense off the field as much as possible. And he has talked. I mean, he's literally talked. And this is the one thing I don't like about, well, there's more than one thing, but one thing about Sean that I don't like is he is just always talking about Josh Allen with turnovers. And when you got a quarterback like Josh Allen is going to make some plays that no one else except maybe Pat Mahomes can make, you got to be able to, you got to be willing to live with a couple brain dead turnovers because it's just what comes with the territory. I just feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm being, you know, a little bit, maybe I'm exaggerating the point a little bit, but it's like trying to reel in Josh too much. I almost feel like, is this a Josh Allen offense or is this supposed to be like an Alex Smith or Trent Dilfer type offense in Sean McDermott's mind? I guess maybe that's where I got a problem with that in the Diggs trade and getting these big physical, good run blocking type receivers. I'm just a little concerned that they're reeling Josh in a little bit too much.
Is there anything that you, I mean, like when you look at, especially him under Joe Brady, that you look at and say, Josh Allen was reeled in last season?
Maybe not so much last season, other than the fact that they just, they ran the ball, which they ran the ball better more.
But you know what, you know which game they had aside from the Dallas game, one of the ones, and I was thinking back to it because it was just like, okay, what was a game, what was the Bills' best offensive performance last year? And that was probably the week, what was it, week four game against the Dolphins, right?
Sure.
They dismantled the Dolphins. They threw 25 times in that game. 25 passes.
Doesn't feel like it, but yeah, you're right.
You know what
I mean?
And it's one of those, and it's like, and I get, you know, and I, trust me, I get when people get, you know, say, oh, this is what McDermott wants, but it's like, yeah, McDermott wants to get up. He wants to be able to run the ball effectively to like work some clock to keep the defensive off the field. But like he wants to be able to run the ball because they're up and they're sealing things away. Like I don't look at it from a, you know, he wants to just ground and pound the entirety of this. Like, I don't think that's what he is. And it's like, and Pat, I will be honest. I want Josh Allen to have less turnovers. That week one game against the Jets last year, that was ridiculous. Like you can look at some of these examples and just be like, what the hell is he doing? And it's not like, I don't want him to be anything different, but like, hey, if those 18 interceptions were 12, I don't think anyone would say like, oh, they're neutering Josh Allen and not letting him play quarterback. Like, no, but you do away with, you know, six of those that were just like, what the hell was happening? There's no way he could have been seeing what was taking place. That's what I'm talking about, right? Not like having him throw, you know, 4 yard slants all game and just turn around and hand the ball to James Cook. So it's, it's like, I get it, but like, I'm
concerned. I got concerns about this offense this year. I do. I don't know. And I also want to do a deep dive at some point into like Joe Brady and this offense under him last year. Was it as good as we think it was? Was it that much notably better than when it was under Ken Dorsey? And how much of that was playing a couple of shitty opponents down the stretch? Or how good was the defense at times down the stretch? I don't know. I got reasons for concern right now. But I will say this, and you brought this up, and you're 100% right. Wide receiver's not the end-all be-all when it comes to the offense and even the passing game. You know, say what you want about Sean, and I'm sitting here in one breath accusing him of wanting to run the ball 50,000 times a game and not throw the ball. He does have a major say in the Bills draft, obviously. And now you go two straight years and they've taken two pass catchers, you know, in the first round, or a pass catcher in the first round each of the last 2 years. Dalton Kincaid does look like a star. Dawson Knox is not a scrub. He had a bad year last year, but he could still do some things. And, you know,
let me ask you a question, though. What? Is there an offense that you look at and say, oh my gosh, this is the one that I.
Frisco.
Okay.
Frisco. I love it. But, you know, they're led by a running back and a tight end, too. So, I mean, they just got.
I mean, they got a running back. They got a tight end. They've got a seventh round. I mean, like, you know, is it all Shanahan? I mean, you know, and I think it's even like, you know, a team like Frisco. I mean, you know, Brandon Ayuk had like 100 targets last year. You know, Debo Samuel under 100 targets last year. Like, it's not this, I don't know. I just think it's interesting when we talk about those things, because it's just like, you know, I think sometimes I do this all the time, what I look at from afar, but then it's like, I look closer and it's just like, oh man, like they're, you know, like Frisco was the example of like, they're pretty modest with how they spread the ball around. Like, it's not just, oh, this receiver dominating the targets or touches or this piece either, but it's just like, Frisco's kind of like one of one, right? I mean, I don't look at anyone else and think like, oh, here's San Francisco light or anything along those lines. Like, I'm trying to see through every angle, like what there is that I would like. And other than, you know, Puka Nacua being a fifth round darling that comes out of nowhere and like being, you know, this year's example of like, you can get wide receivers in the fifth round type of thing. You know, he's this year's Isaiah Pacheco. You know, it was like, you can get running backs in the seventh round and you hold on to this one guy that was a seventh round pick that, you know, that ended up being pretty good. It's just, I don't know, man. It's just, I don't think it's as bad as you
feel. Agreed.
Claypool broke you. I think Chase Claypool was like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Because I think all the way up until I saw that photo of Chase Claypool smiling and signing a contract, I really thought that the Bills were going to pull off some sort of coup, man. I really thought like it might be Brandon Ayuk or maybe Odell Beckham Jr. So, by the way, he goes to Miami. I'm not going to criticize Bills fans because there's 31 other fan bases. They would do the same shit. But you all of a sudden start talking up Chase Claypool, and now all of a sudden Odell Beckham Jr. is a scrub because he went to Miami. Whereas if he went to Buffalo, it would be the complete opposite. I'd say this. It comes down to being fearful, I guess, from a Bills fan perspective of two things. Number one, you lose Stephon Diggs, and you're only replacing him with a bigger-bodied rookie. At the end of the day, that's all you did. And I think, you know, Stephon Diggs, even if he wasn't putting up great numbers, he just commands a lot of attention out there, a lot of respect. And they don't have that right now. There's nobody on this offense that you're fearing. There might be some, like, again, Dalton Kincaid might become a superstar, but you're not afraid of anyone except Josh on this offense right now. Where I think Diggs, you have to count for him a ton. I'm afraid of that. And I'm also afraid of Sean McDermott's a defensive coach by nature. And I'm a little concerned that he's going to reel in Josh too much. And I know, like, we talked about this just a few minutes ago, and I'm not even just talking about with the arm, by the way. If you remember the first half of the season, it was maddening at times that Josh Allen, it was plain as day that they did not want him running the football. And he brings an element to that offense when he's on the move with his legs. And I just get concerned when I see stuff like that. That's what concerns me the most. But I also want to be clear about one other thing. Dude, I'm not trying to say the offense doesn't, you know, even the receiving room doesn't have promise. You know, Khalil Shakir's last 10 games, I did the math. If you add up his last 10 games, yards per game, he'd be at pace for about 800 yards over the course of a full season. Samuel had 851 yards receiving when he played for Brady in 2020 with Carolina. Mac Hollins even is just 2 years removed from having almost 700 yards with Vegas. And of course, Coleman's a talented rookie. He's promising. And then the last guy, Justin, I am going to say the name Justin Shorter. In fact, little spoiler alert, I actually kind of want to get into a deeper conversation with him next week. Yo, I would have sat here a year ago and laughed at Terrell Bernard being any good. And Brandon Bean does have a history of hitting on these late picks. I'm not going to be dismissive to Justin Shorter potentially being somebody who might be pretty good in this league. I think Chase Claypool is the guy they brought in case Justin Shorter's not that guy, if that makes any sense. But I kind of like Justin Shorter a little bit.
Listen, when you go into it, and again, expectations should be in check. And it can just be like, listen, between Justin Shorter, Chase Claypool, Quintez Cephus, Andy Isabella, and KJ Hamler, can one of you guys be a rosterable player? It's kind of it, right? Mm-hmm. Rosterable, maybe contribute in a pinch when you need to. But, I mean, we're talking about your fifth or sixth wide receiver right now, and that's okay. And the other thing, too, and I know we say this, and June 1st will come, and we'll probably all be like, okay, what's going to happen now? But, like, we're like not even to mandatory mini camp yet. right? That yeah. money does free up. We have no idea what can take place. And I'm not saying I expect a trade for Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel, but you know what? Maybe you do get a trade for a Cortland Sutton, or maybe there's somebody else out there that you weren't expecting, or, you know, just there's stuff out there. So I don't want to say wait and see, because I feel like then I'm giving you more hope, but just wait and see a little bit, because it's, you know, we're not there yet.
Well, I think you're going to see a more physical Buffalo Bills football team. There's no question about it. I mean, Mac Hollins, who's a good blocker, by the way, and Keon Coleman. And I mean, no, I can't stand Chase Claypool. He is big and physical, and when he's not being lazy, he actually can block. They get rid of Mitch Morse. They move a bigger guy to center, Connor McGovern. There's a clear commitment to getting bigger and stronger right now with this offense.
But when you talk about that, I mean, right now, if you are starting the season today and the Bills line up their first three wide receivers, who's going to be on the field? Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel. Like, so that's fine. Like, you can look at Keon Coleman and say he's a bigger wide receiver, but it's like, okay, Keon Coleman, let's say, is replacing Gabe Davis. Big receiver for big receiver. Khalil Shakir carries over. Curtis Samuel, similar in size to Stephon Diggs. I mean, he's like 6 foot, 200 pounds. I mean, if those three guys are playing 70 to 80%, you know, percent of the snaps, and then you got Mac Hollins playing 30% and, you know, whoever, like, those three guys are going to be like the primaries that you see on the field. And again, hey, if Mac Hollins fills the Trent Sherfield role and KJ Hamler fills the Deontay Hardy role, and then, okay, that's kind of it. Like, that's what you had last year. So it's, I don't, you know, you talk about some of these bodies, but I think if you don't acknowledge some of the guys that were signed early on that, you know, bring the shiftiness and the speed, it balances itself out.
I think the vision right now kind of feels like, I would say, Keon Coleman is like your Gabe Davis replacement. And the hope I would think would be that Samuel and Shakir both are still ascending. And between both of them, they can kind of replace most of what Stephon Diggs did. And then you're going to have Dalton Kincaid, who you assume is going to be better in year two. And he was fantastic as a rookie. And you do have James Cook, who is one of the better young running backs in the league. I still like Ty Johnson. Look, I know I'm being paranoid right now about the offense. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm not being paranoid. I am. And again, I think it's just, at the end of the day, it's more of an element of the surprise that I expected more done at the wide receiver position after they traded Stephon Diggs. And I just haven't, they didn't. That doesn't mean that it won't work out. It just means that they feel better about what they've already have on this roster than some other people, including myself, feel. So I don't know. We'll see. It's just, this is going to be a different offense. Well, is it going to be a different offense? I that's a legitimate question. How different is this offense going to be, Anthony? If at all, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how different it's going to be. I mean, I do think Curtis Samuel's a bit of a wild card here, right? Is that a guy that's like a combination, you know, receiver lining up in the backfield, taking some handoffs, like think the, you know, the best of Isaiah McKenzie and more of a receiving threat? Like, I don't know, but that's the part that makes it kind of interesting too.
You know what?
I'm most excited. Listen, I know we're talking about wide receivers, but like, Dalton Kincaid, if he takes a step next year, just a step, right? It doesn't have to be some huge leap. I mean, he's a guy that can go for, you know, 90 receptions, 1,000 yards. Like that, you can see that based on the player he was down the stretch. And I think when you talk about it, like, you know, and I get it with Stephon Diggs, but he was option number three in the passing game down the stretch last year behind Shakir and Dalton Kincaid. And you can argue maybe offensive option number four, you include James Cook in there as well. So it's a three ascending players were your three top offensive playmakers down the stretch last season. And they are, you know, two of them going into season three, which is when you traditionally make the jump, and one going into season two. So, and listen, I know I'm being optimistic. I'm trying to make you feel better. It's, you know, all that. But it's just like, I think as I process that piece, and I will be honest too, Keon Coleman, you want this kid to be great right now.
Sure.
Not just because you need him to be great. The personality adds to a lot of that. And it's just like, here's a guy that's become a nationwide story. And it's just like, oh, you can have a receiver that's the focal point of a lot of talk shows and people sharing their clips and videos and doing podcasts and all this because he's a real likable and fun guy, not because, hey, are you happy in Buffalo? Are you unhappy? Is everything okay with you and Josh Allen? Why did you have your hands up? Like, what's going on? Are you going to be back in Buffalo next season? Like, you can fill that void with something that's got a little bit of feel good to it. You got to be able to play. But if he can be able to play, he's off to a pretty good start.
Yeah. You know, in hindsight, like when they signed Curtis Samuel, it felt weird at first because it's like, well, he's a slot guy and Khalil Shakir looked really good in the slot at the end of the year. And you're like, well, because you look at the numbers and where he lined up in the slot over the last couple of years has been overwhelmingly in the slot, just like with Shakir. Now these guys could both play on the outside a little bit. But in hindsight, I kind of feel like that was like the beginning of a step when they were going to trade. Maybe they knew they were going to trade Stephon Diggs, and Samuel was the guy that they kind of envisioned to an extent of what Stephon Diggs was, because at the time it felt like, this dude, you're just signing another slot guy. You already got one. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting, but get ready next week for the Justin Shorter deep dive. This is coming, folks. Whether Anthony likes it or not. Before we get out of here, we got about seven minutes left here on the show. I want to do our finish the sentence segment again. This is kind of, I ask Anthony three pop culture related random questions. Just give us a chance to kick back a little bit. And like I said, give fans watching and listening an opportunity to know a little bit more about what we like and what we don't like about pop culture and life. Let's start here. A fictional character's death that you have still not gotten over is blank.
All right, I'm going to cheat and go with two. And one is near and dear to your heart. I'll say Apollo Creed in Rocky IV. You know, was one that it stuck. And growing up as a boxing fan, right? Like, it's a brutal sport. And it's one of those things, not to say that you could see that happening, but it's like, gosh, it is something different. And to think that happened that early in the film, and that's what set the tone. It wasn't just a like, oh, he got beat up really bad and, you know, Apollo's, he's on life support and he's going to make it and all this type of stuff. Like, no, that was one. And more recently, I would just say, and it's not even like from an emotional standpoint, but Tony Stark dying at the end of Avengers Endgame. And I say that because in a way, it's just, and it was 16 years ago this week that Iron Man was released in theaters. And you just think of like an enjoyment of what the Marvel Cinematic Universe was. And they are struggling with their footing since Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr.'s character left in that role. And it the arc that he played from being at the beginning in that first Iron Man film to kind of coming full circle and for, you know, putting everyone ahead of himself and making that ultimate sacrifice. To me, that was one that it's like, yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't include that. So those are my two.
You know, I got to say, we don't tell each other what our answers are going to be. And every now and then we end up getting a same answer. And this is one of those cases because mine was Tony Stark. You know,
I thought for sure yours was going to be Apollo Creed.
No, Apollo Creed's up there, though. Apollo Creed is definitely up there. In fact, I would say if it was going to be someone from a Rocky franchise, though, it actually would have been Mickey. Yeah. if we did a watch along right now and we put on Rocky III and Mickey dies, I'm going to cry. I'll tell you that right now. Now, literally. But no, I went with Iron Man, Tony Stark as well. You know, it's funny. Obviously, I've seen it at the theater, but just over the past week or so, it was on TV, like TNT or TBS, one of those stations, and the TV just happened to be on, and it came out of, like, I got my home office here in the back of the house, and I went out to the living room, and it was on, and literally that scene where Gwyneth Paltrow's holding him, and he dies near the end of Endgame was on. It got me emotional, man, and it shook me, and you brought up a point, you're right. Maybe for some people, they don't agree with this, but to me personally, the after Endgame, MCU just hasn't been the same since he died and Captain America and Black Widow. It just, but especially him. So that one really shook me. And I don't know. I got kind of emotional just watching it. Even a week ago. Apollo Creed's a good one too, though. So, all right, we'll go on here. Next one. A decade I'd volunteer to stay in forever is blank.
This is such a loaded question, but I'll say the 90s, right? I think the 90s would stand out. And I'm purely thinking from like music, pop culture, the golden age of hip hop, all of those those pieces, right? Like to me, that was a time that you think back to where it just was, probably that I enjoyed the most. So that's probably a predictable answer, but that's what I'll go with.
I would love to be able to say the 90s, but the 90s was my decade of being drunk all the time, man. And, I started working at a bar in the mid 90s. I just feel like it went by in a blur to me. So I can't say the 90s. I think this is a question that probably depends on what your age. I would say for most people, if they liked growing up, if they're happy growing up, they're probably going to pick the decade when they were a teenager or a young adult. For me, it's the 80s. I wanted to say the 50s. The 50s just seemed like it would be so cool. But there's a lot of shit going on.
I wasn't thinking anything that I wasn't alive for, though. That would have been.
Yeah, I wanted to say the 50s. I'd like to be stuck there. But no, I'm going to go with the 80s. I was a happy kid. And I think maybe, it's my birthday now. I'm 53 years old, dude. So I'm old, man. I'm older than a lot of people think. Some people think I'm going to be in my young 40s. I'm not. I'm a full decade older than that. But I was happy growing up. And I think as I've gotten older now, I get even more nostalgic. And I kind of feel like like when someone passes away, you kind of just remember the good shit. You don't really remember the bad times that you had with that person. I kind of feel like the older I get, the better the 80s seemed. Like everything was perfect in the 80s. In reality, it wasn't. But right now, as I get older, I kind of feel like it was. But the music, the movies, the pop culture, the era of the teenage theme movies and stuff like that, I loved a lot. All right, last question here. A movie I walked out on in the theater, or at least one I wish I did, is blank.
And I'll tell you what, I really struggled with this one because I could not think of something to be like, oh, here's an experience at the movies that I hated enough that I wish I had walked out. Like you talk about the stuff we watch growing up, like 80s and 90s movies and all those things that we would enjoy. Like, gosh, I was struggling. And the only time I've ever walked out of a movie theater, it was The Amazing Spider-Man, Andrew Garfield version. And the only reason I walked out, because I was with my son, he was probably like 7 years old. And the lizard was the bad guy, this scary lizard dude.
Yeah.
He got really scared and he turned to me and he goes, I don't want to be here. And it was just like, oh, come on. You know what I mean? Like, and this was before the movie was just starting. And it was like, you bought the snacks, you bought the tickets, whatever. And then it's just like, so we left. So we walked out of the theater, 5 minutes into the movie. And that was it. But again, there's never been one of those where it was like, oh my God, this is horrible, or I'm offended, or it's tasteless. Like, I don't know. Maybe I got to raise my standards a little bit.
So for me, I got the idea to ask you this question. It was on one of the movie stations just on Sunday. And I saw Vanilla Sky at the Galleria Mall. It was with Tom Cruise, and the cast was great. Tom Cruise, Penelope Cruz, Kurt Russell, Cameron Diaz. It was a great cast, but that movie sucked. And I kept thinking in my mind, I'm like, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. 15 minutes goes by, 25 minutes, about 35, 40 minutes in, I said, F this, man. This movie sucks. I literally got up. I was going to go to the bathroom. And once I said I was going to the bathroom, we just left the theater.
I never saw that movie. I wish I had now, just for the sake of the conversation.
Don't. All right, we're gonna get out of here. It's gonna do it for this episode. Thanks, my guy. By the way, I don't know if I'm joking or not about the Justin Shorter deep dive next week. I might be serious.
I'll start doing some homework then.
All right, guys, thank you very much for listening, for watching. If you haven't followed or subscribed, please make sure you do that now. And I'll be back with a brand new episode tomorrow.